That's the same thing. Like, you can always get better. Perfection doesn't exist. So you keep on striving for perfection while knowing perfection doesn't exist, because if perfection would exist, then there wouldn't be any growth possible.
Welcome to the Growth Show. What keeps us driving is what drives you further. This is your hosts, Sebastian Kunz
and Sarah Kaya.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our third episode of The Growth Show. We are very excited to welcome Gilles Leclerc today, who's going to answer some of our tricky questions and tell us a little bit about himself and tell us about growth hacking. Gilles, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and what exactly it is that you do for a living.
So my name is Gilles. I'm a growth marketer. I've been so for the last, I think, 1 year and 9 months, basically. That's the duration of my professional career so far. So about that time, it was December 2016, I started my first job as a marketer for a startup. It was here in Antwerp, where I still live. The start was called Salesflare. Salesflare is a small business CRM. Does a lot of stuff for you automatically. It's smart with data. Doesn't really matter. So it's a software as a service. And when I joined the team, I had no experience at all in marketing. I had like a couple of marketing. I had a lot of degrees from university, which basically don't teach you anything about marketing at all, which I realized later. And at Salesflare, so there were a couple of people there. You had the two founders, some product guys. But that was basically it. Like they had a product, pretty good product, but they had no marketing in place, no audience. Barely any users. And so I had to build up everything from scratch. Long story short, I did a lot of stuff very wrong, did a lot of experimentation, joined a lot of communities, read a lot of books and articles. And I don't know, like 4 or 5 months into the job, people suddenly start calling me a growth hacker, which from the knowledge I have today wasn't really accurate, but it's kind of stuck with me, the label. And then after about a year at Salesflare, I felt my learning curve was kind of flattening. Also, there was a lot, I was doing mostly top of the funnel stuff, so mostly working on awareness and acquisition and conversion on the website. Not so much deeper into the funnel, into the actual software product, which is something I wanted to get into because my biggest learning margins were there. But there was a lot of product people already, and the founders of Salesforce are also mostly product people. So my learning curve was kind of flattening. And by that time, I got an offer from one of the growth hacking agencies here in Belgium called The Growth Revolution. And so that was very enticing for me because it gave me an opportunity to get acquainted with different types of products, so B2C, B2B. So I accepted the offer. That was about nine months ago. And so apart from working with clients there, I was the main responsible. Like I kind of had like a hybrid role. Literally, they called me head of growth, which was just a title, which is often the case with titles. They just sound very cool. Like the actual content of a role is often very different. So, but what I did in practice was, so I worked with clients on projects. And so this goes from working with startups where you're actually functioning as a head of growth for that startup, where you're directing growth and doing the tactics, very often even doing the execution of all the tactics yourself. If it's with bigger companies, then it turns more into consulting, training, coaching, doing a lot of workshops and so on. So that was mostly the client work, but I was also responsible for the inbound strategy, the positioning of the agency, developing and positioning new offerings, internal processes to improve internal working and project management. And I also was the lead on the organization of our conference, which took place in the beginning of June. And what was pretty cool, there were more than 300 people there, speakers from all over the world. So the year before they did it was like 100, 150 people. This year it was 300, 350 people. It's really cool. So that was what I used to do because I actually resigned about a week ago, 1-2 weeks ago from the Growth Revolution. Again, same thing, learning curve a little bit flattening. Wasn't really that motivated anymore. Also, like I worked in a product company now and in an agency. And I like working for a product company better because I really get to deep dive into the audience. And so starting next Monday, I will start working for Sujan Patel, which I don't know if you know him. Mm-hmm. So he's a big SaaS entrepreneur, has 6-7 SaaS companies in a portfolio. And I will be working on several of them and basically doing anything top of the funnel, but also deeper into the funnel, which has a lot of learning opportunities for me. Also really look up to him as an entrepreneur and as a person himself. He's a really inspiring guy, so he's basically going to mentor me. I will be doing it remotely for now. Maybe I will move to the States later. And I'll also check to, on the side, maybe do some freelance consulting so I can develop my own kind of business. So exciting times ahead from starting next week.
Awesome. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
Well, just, I mean, you mentioned already a lot, but if you just try to connect the dots upside from a marketing growth, if you connect growth and yourself, how would you describe it in general?
Well, I think growth is what makes life really interesting. So, but it took me a while to realize this. So when I was younger, I was a very competitive kid. I always wanted to be the smartest kid in the class. I wanted to be the coolest kid on the playground, the best football player on the pitch. Sometimes I was the coolest, sometimes I wasn't. Sometimes I was the smartest, sometimes I wasn't. But what it always came down to is I would always set very ambitious goals for myself and then willing to go to extreme lengths to reach those goals. The thing was, like, whenever I reached those goals, I'd feel kind of empty. So reaching the goals didn't actually make me very happy. So people around me would say, hey, well done. And my dad would say how proud he was of me and everything. But those things, they didn't really make me happy. So I would reach a goal, I would reach a destination, but all I can think of when I reached that goal was, okay, where do I go next? And I just felt like I was running all the time and not getting anywhere. So, and when I was a kid and even like until my early 20s, I remained stuck in this paradox for a while. Also because when I was a kid, so we all have these years in our teenage years when we don't really know who we are and stuff. So, and I was fairly insecure and I really like... looked for approval of others, and so reaching goals is generally what keeps you getting that approval. But because of that, I basically kept living my life to impress others. So reaching goals that I thought would look good to others. The thing is, when you keep on doing this, when you keep on focusing on how to impress others, after a while, you kind of forget how to impress yourself, and you lose track of who you are. You lose track of what makes you happy. You lose track of your direction. And because of all of this, you also grow terrified of failing because you are so used to, you always want to get this approval. So you don't want to fail because then the approval goes away and then you feel really insecure. I kind of got into a vicious circle, got down deep in a pit, basically. It wasn't really the best time of my life. I will spare you the whole story of that. But over time, I realized that as long as you let yourself define by what other people think of you, you will always be their prisoner and you will never really get in touch with who you are as a person. And so by not trying to impress others anymore, by not trying to accomplish things because I thought it would look good to other people, I came to appreciate I came to learn that the greatest accomplishment is not an accomplishment itself, but the process leading up towards it.
Yeah.
So the learning, the evolving, the getting better all of the time. So I realized that the fastest, most rewarding way to actively direct this process of getting better of learning is adaptation through trial and error. That's the best way to learn. And so basically I went from overthinking a lot and all the stuff to really taking action, appreciating reality, how reality reacts to what I was doing, and then take away the learnings to make myself more complete as a human being. And this is basically what drives me every day. And this is also what I get to do in my job every day, because this is exactly what growth marketing is about. To be as objective and unbiased as possible about the environment that your business is in, to show a lot of empathy towards the people you're trying to create value to your audience, and then learning all the time, taking learnings as an input for ideas to make it all better, and testing those ideas with experimentation. And then when you have a learning that really sticks, that really is sustainable, you scale it. That's the same thing. Like, you can always get better. Perfection doesn't exist. So you keep on striving for perfection while knowing perfection doesn't exist, because if perfection would exist, then there wouldn't be any growth possible. So connecting the dots story of me and growth is that basically it makes me happy. It doesn't leave me feeling empty like it did before. So I really struck a balance and a sweet spot there. And I feel very fortunate to be able to do these things basically in my daily life and create value for others doing it.
Sounds awesome, Jill. Very wise words in between. We're going to get back to that later. We assume that you had a lot of clients in your professional life, which supported you, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a common thing that you would say helped in different stages of your life to grow faster?
Well, the thing that always strikes me is this kind of common myth still that, so if you're an entrepreneur and you found a new company, it's like you're really super passionate about it. That makes sense too, like you're quitting your dead-end job, you're investing all of your savings in this new product, so it must be pretty awesome. But this kind of blinds them to from learning new things. And here's the thing, like you can be in love with what you built and what you want to start, and you see the whole vision and the whole future of the company evolving in front of your eyes. But you're not building this stuff for yourself. The inherent to business and to economy is that you create value for others. So it doesn't matter what you think of it. It matters what your audience thinks of it. And so this is something, of course, you get a lot when you do a growth agency. When a startup comes knocking on your door, they're like, hey, I need you to grow my company. But this is always very tricky for an agency because, like, okay, the first question you ask, like, yeah, how many clients do you have? How much validation of the market do you actually have? Because, yeah, it's not because you like your product that the rest of the world also likes your product. And I cannot promise you growth if you don't have product market fit at all. And so there's this misconception that in this world of today where you have access to everyone on the internet, where you have crazy tools, entrepreneurs have this idea that marketing is just something that they can set up, like use a lot of tools, automate a lot of shit and let it run freely.
Yeah.
But actually the marketing is still about reaching people, reaching the right people at the right time in the right place with the right message. And there is no hack for this at all. To get back to the questions, like what they should do to grow their businesses faster is, I don't know, do you guys know Paul Graham from...
Yeah. This comes to mind now from Y Combinator.
Like his most famous words are, do things that don't scale at first. So at the very beginning, you just need to talk to as much people as possible to thoroughly understand your target audience. So you're able to aligning your value to it all the way up to your actual product. Yeah, and then only that, when you have a fit there, really not only product market fit, but also value audience fit or even audience channel fits, if you know exactly where to reach them, only then can you start scaling things. So one of the, you guys know Intercom, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, Intercom, what they do really well, like it's an awesome product, that too, and they do awesome, really high quality marketing. So they launched a lot of ebooks, and the last ebook they launched was about Intercom on growth, and the foreword was written by the founder. And what he basically said, like 50% of the time I spent in the early days of Intercom was just talking one-on-one to people. And this really got me an audience. This got me the insights I needed. And after a while, my first 100 customers, I recruited one by one. But those were exactly the customers that I needed to build Intercom in the product that it is today. And so this brings me to another thing that I really believe in. Like you have the idea of an MVP, a minimal viable product. But I also believe in having a minimal viable audience. So a sample of your total target audience, a collection of your ideal customers, which you then take the time to know inside out so you can align your whole product and marketing strategy, so your whole growth strategy around them. And once you perfectly know how to help them, only then you should start thinking about really scaling up your efforts.
That's awesome.
So if you assume that one of your clients does already know, did a well customer validation and they know their clients, but still they're not that good in growing fast, Did you see any platforms currently that you believe are underestimated? Could be Facebook, could be LinkedIn, probably not Facebook, but which marketers could focus a little bit more when we do right now?
Well, the one platform that comes to mind, and it's one of the ones that I spent the most time on also in my leisure time, is Quora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of the very first things I asked for who doesn't know Quora, so Quora is a Q&A platform. People ask questions there and another in the community writes answers to it. But when I say questions, I really mean like questions about everything, like anything you can possibly imagine. The stupidest, the dumbest, but also the smartest and most philosophical type of questions are on there. And there's an upvote and downvote system. So the best answers end up on top. And the thing about Quora is the quality of the community there is very high. There's very smart people on it. And one of the very first, so first off, like why it's underestimated for marketing, the people that are on Quora is, it's a very broad audience. So the chance, if you have a product, a startup, the chances that your target audience, that some of those people are on Quora are pretty high. the questions that there, the chances that there are questions concerning your space, your industry, your niche on Quora that there are questions about is pretty high. There probably are. So on Quora, it's your target audience is literally coming out there and asking the questions that they're struggling at, that they want answers to. So this can give you a really good idea of the kind of value you want to create, because they literally, people are really saying what they're looking for. You can then check how many people are following a certain question. And this can give you great inspiration. Then it also offers a lot of opportunities for driving actually driving traffic and making connections towards your audience. So one of the first things I actually did right for SalesFlare was I went on Quora, and there were literally people asking for CRM recommendations. So I would list all of these questions, and for example, and then I would write an answer to it, but like in a non-salesy way. So for example, when people would ask, okay, what is the best CRM for a startup? I would go like, okay, if you're a startup and you need a CRM, you probably need something that is very visual, easy to use, that doesn't require a lot of training, that is easy to integrate with your tool set. So like a whole list of things, of the things you should consider when you're a startup and looking for a CRM. And then the last line would be, okay, if you're looking for these qualities, maybe you should check out Salesforce. I drove a lot of traffic doing that. And it's very highly qualified traffic, because people take Quora answers very seriously, especially if they end up on top. And so this was very qualified traffic. I think the conversion rate of Quora traffic conversion towards people starting a trial was like between 12 and 16%, which is huge for software. And then you can also indirectly drive traffic from Quora, just by building up thought leadership. So what I also did when I was marketing Salesforce because my target audience were mostly, especially in the beginning, we were mostly targeting startup entrepreneurs, growth hackers, because those were the shortest sales cycles, and Salesforce is a pretty technical product. So we were looking for people who are quite tech savvy, that didn't need a lot of education to know how to automate sales funnels, for example. So to connect with that audience, I would answer a lot of questions related to startup marketing and growth hacking, and also more broader creativity, productivity topics with a lot of broad relevance. And then you start stacking up followers on your profile. And then you optimize your profile basically to really highlight what you do. So if you write a very cool answer, people will click through on your profile, and then you will see, oh yeah, I'm Gilles, I'm do marketing for Salesflare. And they're like, what is Salesflare? So, and this is basically based on the idea that people buy and do business from people they know, like, and trust. So if you write a lot of great answers and they're like, they really like it and they're inspired by it, and then they see that you're actually working for a product, then it's like, okay, this must be a pretty good product too, because this guy seems to know what he's doing. And this is also basically how I built my brand on LinkedIn. So I wrote a shitload of posts on it. Like I've actually been inactive for the last one and two months of taking a break from it, but I'm coming back. But just by being very visible and by being very top of mind with my target audience, it's very easy to get them to come to you. So in the beginning, before this podcast, you were actually asking me, okay, do you get reached out? Like, you guys just reached out to me on LinkedIn for a podcast. And yeah, this, not always for podcasts, but this happens actually quite a lot. It's how I score most of my leads. But just another note on platforms, like, I think Quora is underestimated, but yeah, like, of course it depends on who your audience is.
Yeah.
So just like, if you're trying to reach your audience, just try to replace yourself, try to put yourself in the feet of your audience, and just think of, okay, what, when they wake up, what do they do? What books are they reading? What platforms are they hanging out? Where do they reading their news? Where are they connecting with like-minded people? And every single answer to this question is basically a potential touch point. And this can give you your first fuel of ideas of where to go to. In the end, it's pretty easy. It's just about reaching people. So like, if I want to make an iPhone game for children or something, then I should not be writing opinionated blog posts. And if I develop a machine that helps grandmas to knit, to be more efficient at knitting, I should not be marketing on Snapchat, for example. Like, it's not that hard. Like, you just really need to become one with your target audience and just be wherever they are, and then understand their behaviors and tie marketing tactics to it and persuasion tactics.
That's awesome. That's very surprising. To the people out there, we don't know the answers before we ask the questions. So me personally, I was very surprised when you said Quora. I was 100%
really?
Sure you're going to say LinkedIn. That's good to know.
LinkedIn is extremely powerful, but everybody knows about LinkedIn. The surprising thing is that, like, the awesome thing about LinkedIn is, like, if you want to get traction on social media, it's a very easy equation. It's whether you get traction or not is defined by the amount of engagements you get, so likes and comments divided by the amount of impressions you have. So the amount of people that see it, and then of those people, the amount of people that like or comment on it. And the higher that ratio, the more traction it will get, the further it will travel across social media. This is true for every social medium. But the amazing thing about what people often forget, there's two things. You have the value, so the thing you're posting, whether it's a video or just a text post or an image or whatever it is. But you also have the audience. Like, I can write an amazing, amazingly inspiring post, but if the people that are reading it are like people who work in restaurants, they will have no idea what I'm talking about. So no one will engage with it. So it will totally kill the reach of the post. So it's very important to create awesome value, but it's at least as important that you make sure that the right people are seeing it.
Definitely.
And what is really cool on LinkedIn is that you have a lot of power of who your audience is.
Yeah.
So
tip number one is don't accept everyone who sends you connection requests.
I learned that the hard way.
There's a lot of irrelevant people out there. And then there's also engage with people who engage on your LinkedIn post that aren't with you yet, because because a post traveled across your first degree network to a second degree network. And then if those people are relevant to you or you can be relevant to them, they can be in your audience. They like the post of you already, so they're likely to also engage with other posts. And then, of course, if you really take it down a stretch, you can also start experimenting with automating connection requests and pulling up lists from Sales Navigator that correspond to a series of parameters like company headcount, role, and then just auto connect with those people, and then making sure you bombard them with value so that you build up your know, like, and trust factor.
Yeah, awesome.
My first inspiration for starting to write on LinkedIn came from Quora. Like, I experimented with writing on some Quora questions, got traction on some, and I was like, damn, this is really fucking powerful. So at first I reposted some Quora answers that went viral. I reposted it on LinkedIn to see what it would do. And this is not as true anymore because the algorithm changed, but like in the beginning when I was doing it, I got crazy traction. Like, I got millions of views on posts and thousands of likes and stuff. So that was It's not the wild, wild west like that anymore, but it's still extremely powerful. And the most amazing thing about LinkedIn is like 90% of the people are like, okay, I don't know what to write, and I'm just not gonna write because nobody will like it and whatever. So, but if you're writing, even if you get zero likes, you're still beating everyone who doesn't write on it.
Yeah.
Because like if there's 1,000 growth hackers in Belgium, and a guy is looking for a growth hacker, those other 999, they might be better than me, but if they know me because they see my face on LinkedIn every day, I will be the one getting the lead and not the other ones.
But I believe one other power of LinkedIn is also, like you mentioned it already, trust is a big thing for people to engage with you. And with LinkedIn, you see the connections, and you see, hey, he knows Sebastian, so he might be interesting or trustworthy because he knows my friends or contact.
Yeah, exactly.
It's cool. Yeah, so you mentioned like Quora and LinkedIn. Thinking of startups, for example, do you have a tool in mind that people could use to really grow their business, grow their audience, grow anything in particular?
Well, this is a hard question. there is no really, there's not really a best tool. So I think it's a mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make. There's like, for example, if I do workshops on growth hacking, the part that gets the most engagement is the part near the end where I introduce a couple of tools. Then they're like, oh my God, amazing powers and stuff. But they're not even really asking themselves if they actually need this tool or not. So there's this very big risk that in the end you will end up paying for 20 tools and you will only be working and experimenting with tools and you totally lose track of what you actually need to do. So I guess this is, yeah, people just love shortcuts. It's like, okay, this is a tool. This is something that you cannot do yourself. It's automate something or that. But the question is whether you actually need that tool or not. So you should always start from like analyze. Growth hacking is basically about optimization. Like you're looking for opportunities that you can use to drive more growth, whether it's acquiring more traffic or whether it's getting more users to sign up or getting users to use a multitude of features. So you should first analyze your whole funnel, look for weaknesses, diagnose your problems, prioritize your problems, and then look for tools that can help you solve these problems. And this is different almost for any business. So that being said, there's of course a couple of tools that I think are relevant in most cases. And okay, so this might be boring, but I will explain why I named it. So the very first thing is always like everything starts with understanding your environment. So the very first thing you should always have is a very powerful analytics tool. Google Analytics is, for a free tool, surprisingly great. You can always go for more expensive tools that have a little bit more functionality, but I don't think you need them. And if you have a software product, you also need something like Mixpanel to have like a very clear overview of who's doing what within your app all the time. I mentioned them before. Intercom is super powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I really believe in leveraging customer success and customer insights for growth. And just when you're at a website, a lot of people, it doesn't matter how well your website is, people will always have questions. But if they need to call a number or fill in a form or send an email, this is too big of a threshold always. It's way easier to start chatting to you. So if you have a live chat on it, and I think Intercom is the most powerful one, then it's way easier for them to get in touch with you and for you to build a relationship with them and to really understand what they need. You can also use Intercom to trigger a conversation. Like you can, based on different pages or different behaviors, you can have pop up some screen to send them to a blog post or something like that. So it's also really powerful to engage and to really direct the user experience on a website. Project management tool. So I use Trello for everything in my life, like literally everything in my life. My to-do lists are in there. My content ideas are in there. Every project for a client that I ever worked on is in there. My growth experiments ideas are in there, like the whole growth funnel and doing the growth process where you do experiments and analyze them in different stages. I use Trello for that. But I think my favorite tool of all time is probably Zapier.
Mm-hmm. Automation.
Okay, so Zapier is, yeah, for the listeners who don't know what Zapier is, so Zapier is an automation tool that lets you connect two apps and a lot more than two apps. It works like there you have a trigger and an action. So one app does one thing, and if it does that thing, then the other app does something else. And you can build endless streams of automation for this. So applications can be very easy. For example, okay, someone filled in a form on my website. I get an email now from it, or I get a message in a Slack channel. I did some crazy stuff with it already. Like I will tell you one story, not because it's that useful, but very, very much in the beginning when I was doing marketing, I did quite some outbound marketing, like cold emailing, just because it's extremely easy, especially if you automate it. So it's the conversion is of course terrible. To be clear, I really appreciate GDPR being here so that people cannot be lazy like that anymore. But I'm just going to tell this story to show you what the power of Zapier can be. So what I did was I first would scrape leads from LinkedIn. So I would use LinkedIn Sales Navigator and I would set the parameters to target exactly the people that would be in the target audience of Salesflare. I would scrape their LinkedIn profiles. And what I was interested in at that point was, okay, now I actually have better ways to get their emails. But at that point, it was I was interested in their first name, their last name, and their company, their domain. Because a professional email address in 90% of the cases is made up of first name, last name, at domain, first name, at domain, first letter of the first name. So there's like a final amount of combinations, permutations that the email address will be. So I would scrape these, I would scrape first name, last name, company, and domain. I would put them in three columns in a Google Sheet. Then I would have that Google Sheet program to automatically generate the four most common permutations of the email. And then I would connect Google Sheets with Voila Norbert, which is an email finding tool. And I would have it run by its API to check whether the email was valid or not. So if it wasn't valid, it would jump to the next column to check the next permutation. If the email was found, then it was automatically added to a campaign in Mailshake called email campaign, so that person would get a cold email. If they then would reply to that cold email, it would automatically be added as a lead in SalesFlare in the CRM, except if they would reply something like unsubscribe. So basically, the only thing I had to do was put on the robot to scrape LinkedIn, copy-paste it in a Google Sheet, and all the way from there, everything was automatically up until the point that they finish as a lead in your CRM. I do not recommend this at all. But
at least not in Europe.
What generally my general rule for automation is that you can automate the hello, and then be human to build the relation. So what I still do today, so I mentioned before that I do still automate connection requests on LinkedIn. So my idea is here, like, okay, imagine I want to, for example, when I was trying to sell tickets for the Grow conference, one of the people that we really wanted to appeal to buy tickets were innovation managers of bigger companies. So I would pull up a whole list of innovation managers in Sales Navigator, and I would automatically send them connection requests. I would personalize the connection request. So a lot of people accept this because, well, you personalize the invite, which is something nobody does. So that already stands out. And so why do I automate this? Because it's 100 people. I want to get in touch with them, but I don't know them. So I can also manually tell every single one of them hello. But it's still going to be hello, so I might as well automate it. Thing is, once you send a connection request, and they either, there's two scenarios. Either they accept it and they talk back to you, and then you immediately have a conversation, and then you can start talking to them. You can start building your relationship. You get to know each other. Second option is they accept it and they don't reply to you, but they see your content all the time. So, and that's how you create visibility and top of mindedness. And the tool I use for that is Linked Helper. So a little bit more hacky stuff to make it more interesting apart from the boring, obvious stuff.
Well, it's actually an interesting point. So since I know Zapier personally well, but I never used it to complicated tasks like you did, because you need a lot of time and also fantasy for doing what you did. But if you do that, you actually save a lot more time. So actually,
that's
interesting.
The idea. So use automation to automate the robot work, you know?
Yeah.
Like you have, this is what I believe in for automation. I also believe in this in terms of the future of our human society. So whenever something is repetitive, like think of what you are doing on a daily basis. If something is repetitive, you can probably automate it. And the more you can automate of that stuff, the more energy and creativity and brain power you can spend on things that really do make a difference, like writing content, for example, which is way more powerful to really make connections with people.
It's just awesome. Save your time for something that adds even more value to your audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you have, on your journey, Jill, did you have anyone to teach you those skills? Did you have a mentor who basically taught you everything, or did you think about it a lot and came up with everything yourself?
I didn't really have a mentor so far. I did, like, I always try to be the dumbest person in the room, especially before I'm 30. So I didn't really have a mentor, but I just learned a lot from the people around me. And one of the reasons I also now resigned from the Grow Revolution is because I was the smartest person in the room. I was more learning how not to do things, like, than to actually do things.
That's also helpful.
Yeah, I was powerful in a paradoxical kind of way. But so I learned a lot, for example, from the founder of SalesFlare, which is still a friend of mine today. Super smart guy, has the right, has just the right idea on how to build a startup company, how to build a company, how to build a product. The guy I learned from the most is probably Josh Fechter.
Mm-hmm.
So what did a lot for me, what really accelerated, what set me on the right path to becoming a growth marketer and to really finding something that I love to do and that I'm good at, is I was like 1 month in my first job at SalesFlare, I was dropped into his community. And I was just looking my eyes out for all the things he would post there and all the things the community would post. And so my growth hacking journey basically started by trying out things that group members posted. And then after a while, I started coming up with my own ideas. And then also, this is also, for example, something that comes from him, is document everything, share and create value all the time, creating over consuming. So those were big inspirations for me. So yeah, from him, I learned a lot. I could also call him a friend right now. For example, he was, for example, a speaker at our conference. I hung out with him here in Antwerp, was super cool. But it's like mentors in the traditional sense of the word, not so much.
So there's this saying, basically it says like a bad mentor tells you what to do,
a good mentor explains you things, and a great mentor demonstrates. So I just observe people basically, and I try to take away the things that I think are really great about them and that I could align to my own life and my own way of working, my own brain, because of course you also don't have the exact, you're not the exact same person, you're not on the exact same path in your life. This also applies to advice, I think. Like I have, like I'm a bit of an annoying person when it comes to advice,
in the sense that
it's like in a lot of cases when people give you advice, like giving advice in the sense that I would now tell you what I would do in your place in a situation, for example, most of the time it's actually me talking to myself in the past or something, because I wasn't in a situation that I now think is the same as yours or anything like that. But very often, of course, that isn't the case. We're all unique. We all have unique contexts. And the situations are never the same. And what the other problem I have with advice is I can give you advice. I can tell you to, you should do this. But I'm not accountable for the actual outcome of that advice.
Yeah.
I have no skin in the game. So that's a book actually that I just read. So I have nothing to lose. You're taking all the risk and I'm telling you what to do. Which is not to say that advice is bad stuff. I'm just someone who just, I look at something like a learning or advice or a quote or whatever thing. And I try to align it to my own situation. So to take away. So, and in this case, for me, there's not something really as like great or bad advice. And probably people at some point gave me what you could say bad advice, but chances that I literally carried that out and then figured out that it was bad advice, that probably never happened because I always aligned it to myself.
Yeah.
Plus also because if you reason that, okay, like this person thinks I should do this, you are still responsible for you actually doing it.
Yeah.
So him, like if that advice turned out to not be good for my life, it doesn't mean that it was inherently bad advice. Maybe if it worked in his situation, it did work, or because he had another perception or interpretation from it. I just always take away the learnings and try to make them fit in who I am as a person and to align them to the situation that I am in.
That is awesome. I think lots of good advice, even though you don't want to really give that advice. But to sum everything up, you mentioned stuff like automate things as much as possible, being efficient about your target group, knowing exactly what you want and what your target group wants, and your audience, of course. Of course, align the advice to yourself and not just take it for granted what other people say. I really like the sentence that you said in the beginning that you quoted from someone else, do things that don't scale at first. And your personal story when you said that you try to reach goals for other people, but then you reach those goals and it made you feel empty. So I think this is a big understanding and a like very important learning for our audience. Reach goals for yourself or you'll feel empty.
Yeah.
And actually, I believe like the most important message I think you had today was like be human and engage with people and find the right people. This is probably the most powerful message you had today. Probably.
This I got from a book from in the 1930s, How to Win Friends and Influence People. People buy and do business with people they know, like, and trust.
Yeah, it's awesome. For everyone out there, please follow Jill on LinkedIn. We'll share the link, we'll share the URL under this post. And Jill, thank you so much for being part of this today, for sharing your insights and your experiences. And we hope to see you soon somewhere around the world.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Likewise.
Thank you, Jill. Thanks. Bye-bye.